Welcome to the Bag Drop, Untold Stories in Golf. I'm your co-host, Matt Considine, here with our fellow co-host, the Professor. Professor Dr. Kevin Moore, how are you this morning?
I'm, to steal a phrase from a fellow podcaster, I'm a little worse for the wear this morning. We had my wife's
birthday party.
I had my wife's birthday yesterday, and it was also the first like 79 degree day of the year. So we cut out of work about 3:30 or so. Went and enjoyed some Creature Comforts Brewery, then one of our favorite restaurants with some friends. So we're okay.
And like any good birthday party, it ended with another viewing of Maverick, Top Gun. If you're a listener to the pod, Professor and his wife really liked that movie. Like, what do you guys? So you're out, you're hanging with friends. Then did you guys like say, "Hey, I'd like to leave early and watch Maverick, Top Gun for the 9,000th time"?
Is that how it works? The friends just know we're going to just bounce as soon as we're leaving. We're going to go watch Maverick. It's that time.
I mean, there's a lot. I have some psychologists I know down in Georgia. I don't know what that means about you two, but it is a good movie. I'm not taking anything away from the movie. It's a great movie.
It's very motivating.
I don't know if I want to watch it every night.
It got me out of bed this morning, right? You watch that movie, you're like, I got to do work. I got to make an impact.
That I see. Well, let's make an impact. And actually, if you don't mind, Professor, I'd like to hijack the intro this morning for just a second.
Uh-oh, where are we going with this?
We did a episode a number of weeks ago now, but I don't think I ever circled back on Grow the Game.
And a little feisty episode, maybe.
Maybe a little bit more down. We like to be positive on this show, but maybe we're a little bit of calling out some of the BS around the term Grow the Game. Mm-hmm. And I don't think another episode has lit up my text messages, my emails, my Slack more than the Grow the Game episode. And so the reason I'm bringing it up is I want it to be known that the Bag Drop podcast, both the professor and I, we say a lot of things. I mean, when you're hosting podcasts, you're going to say a lot of things. But we do care. We're not just like, you know, taking swings at groups and organizations for the will. We care. We actually want to see the game of golf succeed and do well and be the live up to its ideals in a way. And so I got to just say, I was almost very inspired by some of the comments that I got. A lot of PGA professionals that New Club works with reached out. A few members of ours that volunteer with organizations like the First Tee and Evan Scholars and some of these others reached out. And some staff members from some of those organizations too. And so I wanted to say at the top of the show that I am going to commit to getting more involved with some of these organizations, because it's not, I think it's, my dad always said, you know, don't just call it the problems, be part of the solution. And I think there is some awesome stuff. So I live in Northeast Ohio now, and there's a First Tee chapter in Cleveland. There's a First Tee chapter in Akron. I'm going to get involved first off with the First Tee in Akron. I've already reached out to the folks there. I want to see programs in action. I'm going to volunteer my time and see how I can help. Just sitting where I sit in the golf ecosystem, let's call it. I want to do that. And then the second thing is, you know, the PGA sections, man, there is so many good people trying hard to make these inclusive programs happen, to diversify the game. And just locally, I just want to shout out the Northern Ohio PGA. I know the Illinois section probably the best. I know the Georgia section second best. I don't know these guys, but I just wanted to, some of the comments from their programs, some of the staff that they have, David Griffith, Matt Rutland, our own member, Danielle Moniz, formerly Nicholson. There's like tons of good people that are just living this every day, right? And trying to not just service their memberships and their organizations, they're trying to do it. And I think they need support is what I kind of took. I took away from the comments that I got and had to think about it for a couple of days, to be honest with you. But man, I think it's really cool that this show sparked something in people. That show sparked something in people. And now it's action. And myself, I had to look myself in the mirror. I was like, you know what? You're right. I don't think you have enough information on these programs. I don't think you're involved enough with these things that I don't want it to just be smoke. I do care about. I think the Bag Drop cares about. I think the New Club Golf Society cares about. And so this is maybe a little bit of a call for others that are listening to not just gripe about the things in golf that we don't like. Let's go do it. You know, join a board, join a volunteer group. We talked a lot about giving back and how good that feels in the game on a one-to-one basis. Well, those organizations are trying to throw rocket fuel on it, and they need funds, they need support, they need help. So yeah, I think it was a really good good reflection for me.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear you feel a call to action. And I hope anybody that does listen to that episode, I would want the main takeaway to be, yeah, there are wonderful people trying to do a lot of good. But at least I would say my intention was to call out ways in which we can, open up the space so more people can do that work. And so the people that are doing that work also have more support, more resources, more time into it, that we put more of a focal point on that, including the ways which organizations are organized so that they can do those things.
Amen.
So yeah, because I think of like the GSGA, I was talking to our buddy Tripp just yesterday, actually, and I talked about in the last year and a half, I've seen evolution within them, right? Like the stuff they're doing, like I've seen a big pivot from where I think they were 5 years ago on some of these things. And I think the call from that episode would be for other organizations to look at organizations like that and say, what are they doing that they now do this huge adaptive golf push? Like, what did they do? They had to make changes within their organization to be able to do that. What did they do? Can we do those same things? You know, that's what I would want the message of that episode to be, of like, hey, let's look at each other. What you did with yourself, what can I do to be better, to be more active and not just gripe?
Yeah. And actually, this is a little theme of what what our discussion today was going to be about, which is a favorite golf tournament of ours happening this week, if you're listening, in the second week of April. But just how organizations can change.
Yeah.
And they can make progress. And it doesn't happen without good people that get involved. And so today we're going to be talking about the Masters. And the professor here, as a transplant Georgian? Yeah?
Yeah, I've been here almost 15 years now. So I feel like...
The number of folks you've hosted for the Masters, I feel like could fill at least a practice round.
At least a hotel, that's for sure.
So we're going to get into that a little bit. But we sit here in March, and Professor, I got to say, my basketball, I have been more excited for March Madness this year than other prior years. Probably a little to do with my Akron Zips.
For those that can't see, he is wearing an Akron basketball t-shirt or long sleeve t-shirt. For those that don't know, Akron basketball is a dang good program. There was a time, I want to say, they were one of six teams with like 21 wins or more in a season for like 10 straight seasons. So they were up there with like the Dukes. Keith Danbrot was the coach. I mean, they haven't made the dance as many times as they should have, but they are a storied program.
So today I just wanted to, off the top of the show, share with you a little, you know, I'm making my picks, and I love conference tournaments. I almost think conference tournaments are better than the dance, the full dance. It doesn't have as much hype, but when you think about, they got to go three back-to-back nights to win their conference champ. Like that's crazy type of, I mean, think about having to rest every night after those games. And I know they're all 18 and 19 years old, but still. So conference tournaments are, I would say, one of the most underappreciated, because you look in the stands at these conference tournaments, they're pretty empty. It's one of the most fun. Those games are so tight. These kids care so much. So a little college hoops talk. I just wanted to, John Groach, who is the new head coach for the Akron Zips, he is a stat guy. He's like a closet stat guy. But I thought you might, I have a theory, Professor. And I maybe there's some not integrity that I want to call into question here, but I want to get your take on this. Uh-huh. So I've been following the Zips all year. We go to a few games throughout the year, and
we look good this year.
They're a number one in the league, in the Mid-American. Like, it's very clear. They got the talent, they got the athletes, they got the coaches. But at the end of the season, they rock their rival Kent State, who had some injuries, who was kind of a little down. They rock them. And then they lose three of the last four out of nowhere. I mean, and we were, you know, watching on ESPN Plus and stuff. Like, wait, what's going on here? This doesn't look right. And they were tight games that they were just losing. And the one that they won, they should have lost to Northern Illinois. So here's what ends up playing out. Kent matches up with a healthier player. So they got a couple players back. Kent matches up really well with Akron. I mean, they're a rival, but they were the eighth seed. And Toledo ended up, because of these losses at the end of the year for Akron, Toledo ends up getting the one seed. Yesterday in the tournament, Kent State beats Toledo, handedly, may I add, and Akron plays Miami, wins comfortably.
Yeah.
Is it possible for a stat-obsessed basketball coach, who I know this guy is, that he is looking at the matchups and he's looking at the side of the bracket and he threw three of the last four games? Is that and does that call into question integrity? Because like I've been thinking about this. It just doesn't add up. If you watch those games, you're like, this is not the same team. What the hell is going on here? Maybe they were just at the end and it's like, all right, we got to win the tournament anyways. But if that were the case, which is my hypothesis, does it lack integrity? Is it something that shouldn't be allowed, tossing games to get your desired seed?
I don't know. So this gets thrown out in multiple sports, right? In terms of teams intentionally blowing games for seeding. And a thing I come back to with like coaching greats, they coach every game as if it's a championship game, right? Like you play as you practice. So you play as you play too. So if you go into three or four game and you're like, hey guys, we're going to throw these next three or four games. I don't know if a great coach would ever do that because of what that sets up for your players when now it's time to go again, right? Like so many top players talk about like you play every down as hard as you can. You play every possession as hard as you can. So from a strict throwing perspective, I don't buy that argument. Like he's in the locker room saying, hey guys, we're going to lose. Now, as a coach, do you maybe don't bring your best play calling out and that sort of stuff, and you start working.
I'll
you start,
just say this:
you there start working
interesting
on
starters. There was some, interesting
so like you
starters.
Play some different guys, right? Like, and you can talk to the team. Hey, we're going to play some different guys. We're going to rest up, like that sort of thing. Like, we're not throwing the game. We're going to play as hard as we can. I might not bring out my A playbook, you know, and we're on the best set plays or whatever. Like against this team, we're going to practice some stuff because we're going to see Kent in the finals. We're going to see Kent in the second round. We're going to practice some sets and show some stuff like NFL or college football teams do this all the time. They'll run a few plays in an off week against a bad opponent just so the other team has to film plan it, right? They'll do stuff like that. They would never run those plays probably in a big game, but they're going to do it so their team. So I could see that where like, yeah, you're not out there throwing out, okay, to win this game, we would do all of these things in this way. You're like, okay, we're going to do all these things in this way. It's not the optimal plan for this game, so we might lose it. And honestly, as a coach, I don't care if we lose it as long as we're playing hard because maybe we even get the benefit of a better seed out of that in terms of our matchups. So it's not you're not gearing for it, but you let it be an okay outcome. I think you nailed it.
I think you nailed it. I didn't, you know, and if Coach Groch was here, which I've met the man,
we got to get him on the pod.
We'll turn this into a basketball pod. Maybe next, how about next? We'll get into the spring and then next spring we'll make it a basketball pod. But he would say, you're an idiot. I was fighting every minute to win those games. But I think what you're saying is more likely, and he probably knew that side of the bracket was going to.
As a coach, you know that. And so you're not, I doubt you're hating where that matchup ends up.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, enjoy your college hoops. But today, this week, what you got to enjoy is the Masters before we get ahead of ourselves. Thanks to our friends at Titleist, by the way, for the support of New Club and the Bag Drop podcast. Kevin, we got a bunch of opportunities. We just did our loyalty program with Titleist where you buy three Pro V, Pro V1X, Pro V Less Dash, whatever you play. What do you play, by the way?
I play the X now. The new X is really, really good for me. Like, I want something off the irons and wedges that carries the distance I want and feels a little heavy. And that ball is nice and heavy.
Yeah, this is another. I'm still playing the regular V1, but one of those scenarios you got to go get fit, and that's what I wanted to promote today for our friends from Titleist is their Sure Fit process and their certified fitters all across the country. We got some opportunities with New Club this year coming up on May 15th in Chicago. You've probably seen the email if you're a member. You can go get fit. So book one of those appointments. We're going to have more of those coming to Atlanta and some of our meetups around the country. So it's really fun to get more ingrained with our partners at Titleist and also get yourself fit, man. Like I think I'm a evangelist for it because it's been so long for me. I thought I had such awareness of my game and I didn't need, you know, the deeper fitting process. But the more I get into it, the more I'm like, man, I want to fit my ball is just a great example. I haven't got the ball fitting done. I want to do that next. But thanks to our friends at Titleist for the support of today's episode. Professor, let's get on to the show. I meant to pull up the music. I didn't have it, but it's playing enough probably on your TV set at home and your laptops and wherever else, the Masters app. But when you hear that music, what do you think about? What mood does it put you in? Where does it take you?
I mean, is there one? You should pull the music up because we could have got our first trademark sort of pull down request in the mail. That would have been, you know, we could have.
We've actually had that before on this show. Yeah.
You don't let me know these things, but that long list of Masters letters that, you know, people get pull that down. That'd been a thing. But man, one, ESPN, they haven't been using that music in all their commercials. That's unethical in my opinion because. I mean, do you just hear Jim Nance's voice? Does that just, you hear, you're anticipating his voice coming on and soothing over your soul? I know you got a special voicemail from him one time, I believe. You still keep to this day.
Oh, that's what we should have pulled up. I have a voice memo from Jim Nance on my phone. But that you know what? That elicits so many memories that I have tied to this week. And where does it take you?
You always hear in December. Typically, I think that's about when they run that first commercials around that December time, because I think they're probably also leading up to Kapalua. Like they know from advertising, the Golf Channel and all that one. Like get people in, we know it's coming. But yeah, you hear in December, it's rainy out, it's wet. And all I can think about is like sitting in a country club lounge room or on my couch with friends and Claire and that. And just being glued to the TV all day watching that lush green. We're going to be so contradictory to what we say some other episodes. Lush, green, beautiful, pristine, well-executed, overseeded, everything perfect. And just sitting there and knowing for 7 straight days or 4 straight days, however much you're enjoying it, everything's going to be perfect. And
yeah,
you're just going to sit there being content.
I want to call out the contradiction off the top of the show because this is just what age does. I've been thinking about this. This was my shower thought this morning. When I was a kid, the Masters was it, man. I was born Wednesday of the Masters in 1985. My daughter was born Wednesday of the Masters in 2020, a November Masters, which that's my favorite artwork in our. I have the official Masters poster. It was Lee Wobranski's Masters poster from 2020, but it has all the autumn leaves behind 13. It's or 12. Uh-huh. 12. It was just gorgeous. But so I have that kind of sentimental attachment. But here's what I was thinking about with aging in the Masters. When you're a kid and you grow up loving the game of golf, the Masters is the pageantry. It's like it's kind of the Disneyland of. Or you know, Mickey Mouse on TV. It's like we're so naive and we love it so much and it's presented so well and the drama is so incredible and all these things that the Masters has curated over so many years. But then you get older and then you realize like, it's a small world after all. It's all animatronics in the background or, this is actually a really controlled, slightly contrived narrative of what I dreamed of as a kid, right? And I think a part of you as an adult, at some point, you got to say, who gives a shit? Like, forget about it. Just tap into that 7-year-old kid or that 8-year-old kid. Just tap into the geek out on all the other stuff. And don't worry about how much water and pesticides they're using on the grass. Don't worry about, you know, the racist guy that probably started the club. Don't, you know, the years of sexism at Augusta National. So there's all these like negatives that as you learn, as I didn't know when I was a kid, I didn't know women couldn't be members of Augusta National, for example. But also the flip side of that is it adds a lot of context to the tribute for Lee Elder. It adds a lot of context to our friend Carl Jackson. It adds a lot of context to Condoleezza Rice and how much progress and the women's amateur, which happened last week. The ANWA. So like I just wanted to call that out at the top of the show so we don't have to talk about all the contradictions of the things that we do really care about, you and I, and that we like to talk about on this show. Because the Masters, to some degree, it is Disney World. And when you go to Disney World, you will have a lot more fun if you just enjoy the smiles on people's faces and don't look behind the animatronics. Don't look at, you know, all the production into it and all the factors that are deeper. That stuff's interesting, but it's not gonna, you just gotta let yourself enjoy it sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, the comparison's apropos, right? Because I think they hired Disney to help them design everything at Augusta in terms of the way you get into the place and the way you flow across the grounds. It's the whole mindset of Disney knows where you're going before you even know where you're going. You think you're controlling where you're walking and all that, but they have a probability model of who's going where, and it's pretty dang good. And I think Augusta borrowed that for getting into the grounds and then how you disperse across the grounds. So Augusta knows where you're going before you're going anywhere.
I forgot about that. I think on the show years ago, we did more of a deep dive into some of the behind the scenes stuff of Augusta. Fascinating. I forgot that they hired Disney. Let's talk about going to the Masters. Oh,
that's so great.
So hopefully some folks listening won the lottery and are headed down to Augusta for the week or a couple days of the week. Because of you, I've been invited a number of times, not only because of you. I think I've gone to, actually, I look at my wall right now. I was at the 2012, 2013, 2017 Masters. You and I enjoyed some rounds together.
I remember
that. But what's your approach as a man who lives in Georgia? I also think there's something with the lottery and your Georgia address, because it is disproportionate. Of the number of people that apply across the world to get Masters tickets, every time you're there, it feels like majority people from the state of Georgia, which I'm not saying is bad. I think it's probably a good thing. But why do you think that is?
I mean, they do have the huge history of the ticket, not the lottery itself, but just the passes, right? That who knows what percentage of their daily allotment is wrapped up into those. And those are almost exclusively Georgia residents, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's the thing.
That's true.
If you were born and raised in Georgia back in the probably 50s, 60s, 70s, right? Like, you could be anybody and get a week-long passes, several of them for, who knows, probably a dollar back then or whatever. And you got grandfather, you're in forever once you got those, right? So I know several, you know, numerous friends that their family has 8 tickets, right, every year at face value, and they've had them forever and they'll keep them forever. And Augusta's changed some rules, how they get passed down and everything recently. But yeah, I think a lot of those, but I wouldn't be shocked too if the lottery is not a true lottery and where everybody's equally weighted. I feel like Augusta also, any tournament reserves that right based on what they want in terms of the makeup there. Do they want a lot of international people? Do they want a lot of state people? Do they want a lot of Southeast? Like, who do they want coming? Because again, they're a very controlled environment. They're going to want to also control the makeup of their population in terms of where the people are coming from. So I would expect it not to be a pure lottery, and I don't have a problem with that. Like,
yeah, another thing I have to ignore just to enjoy, enjoy the week.
I mean, the fact is we get to apply to a lottery, and
yeah,
we know a lot of people that have won it, right? And you get to go at a practice round. I don't know, what is it, $85 now or whatever? You know, it used to be real cheap, but still it's super affordable. And yeah, going. I mean, the Open is my favorite golf tournament by far. Having gone to both, nothing compares to the Masters in terms of the production of when you go. Like, it truly is. I don't even know what to call it, right? It is a orchestration.
Did I tell you the Grandma Jean story on the lottery real quick before we move on to getting into the... Did I ever tell you that one?
I don't think I have.
I'm sure I did at some point. You've forgotten. But the year my grandmother, Jean Marie Considine, passed away, we would always put her email, our grandpa's email. Like, you put in every email.
You play the game, right? Yeah.
You play the game. And that's how we won it, maybe only once. But the year she passed away, she won and we didn't see it. So we lost out on four Saturday tickets.
And Saturday tickets too.
We didn't find it. My brother finally got her logins and stuff, and we didn't find it until 6 months after she passed. Rest in peace, Grandma Jean. She was laughing. She was laughing from having you idiots.
That's right.
Checking email, you idiots.
Yeah.
What's your plan when you go in the gates? So the pearly gates, when you walk in, you've been so many times. What have you found to be the best way to experience it?
Yeah, I give this suggestion to every first timer. And honestly, I think I still do this most of the time. I get more excited going with first timers because always getting to do this. Where I think the best way, the one that's accepted, if you're a merch person, I'm a merch person, just knock that out. Like, be there as early as you can. Get to that merch tent right there at the main entrance, ideally. They've added a great one in the back you can enter. I think enter in too. You might want to do that. But I prefer walking those main gates by the practice facility, right? Getting to see all that. I mean, it is like you're going to Disneyland. Everybody's smiling. The customer service is amazing. Get your merch out of the way if you're a merch person, because they just bag it and ship it. Bag it and ship it so you don't have to worry about it the rest of the day. Pay for the shipping. It'll be at your doorstep within 2 days. And also, if anything breaks, they replace it and they send you extras sometimes. So they have a whole thing, yeah. So knock that out if you're a merch person, because you don't want that hanging over you, and you want to see what you might buy later too, because you're going to probably make 3 or 4 stops by the end of the day. But no, I think the best thing is Jack Nicklaus has said it. Tiger's probably said it. The greats say it. Walk the course backwards, right? Mm-hmm. Go there. Well, run the merch, get the chairs. Walk the course backwards. When you're doing that, set the chair where you want to go sit later in the day. Just put it there. But man, take a time to walk that course backwards. Take 3-4 hours to do it. Stop, have a beer, stop to have a sandwich, whatever along your way. Stop to see some shots at some of your favorite spots from watching on TV, but do walk the entire course backwards, every hole, to get a feel for it, because it's cliche, but the broadcast doesn't do it justice. It just,
it's true.
I mean, you've been there. Like, what stood out to you most? Like, when you first time you went, what were the things that popped out?
Well, I know the year was 2012, but I was with you for a practice round the first time.
Me, you, and Ricky, you'll remember this. Rokic and my dad that first time?
It sounds right. I think so. So we did exactly as you laid out, and we were going to walk down, but we were walking across one fairway.
Yep.
And I think I was wearing loafers at the time. I took off my shoe. And you remember this? So I take off my shoe and I literally just wanted to feel the fairway with my bare foot. That was what crossed my mind. That's like the first action I did walking in Augusta, which I guarantee I'm not the first, but it just doesn't look real, right? The agronomy practice is surreal. And so I just wanted to get a feel of those bristles on my toes. And so I did that, and literally within seconds, there's a hand on my shoulder, a very kind, soft hand that says, "Sir, please keep your shoes on at the Masters and enjoy your day." And it was this nice guy, not in a green jacket or anything, but just doing his job. He had a little earpiece in, and I go, "Yeah, no problem. Sorry about that." He goes, "No problem. You're good. Enjoy your day. Have a great one." And everyone is just so nice in there and so polite. And again, Disneyland, it just doesn't feel real to some degree, but that is the charm of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, how about
so where do you
up,
sit?
How about walking up 10? Well, what was your first experience walking up 10? Do you remember that one? Walking it backwards?
Yeah, going it backwards and walk. Yeah. I mean, being tired, you're like, geez, good. You can really play this hole going this direction. You know, my quads were on fire.
Yeah, it's like a cliff, right?
Loafers.
Which is perfect because you get up to the top and then you can just stop and relax near the tables where everybody's eating, right? And look at all the famous people, all the green jackets in there eating their lunch. So you get a nice little rest.
One other experience is I've had, because you've watched it for so long on TV and know every single hole, in your mind, it's larger than it is. So for some reason you think like the dining area, like you said, is going to be just bigger. And then you see it and there's Arnold Palmer sitting there literally having an Arnold Palmer 2 feet away from you. And you're like, it's smaller. It's kind of more intimate than I would say. Like the whole course, you almost feel every corner and pocket of the course in a way, which is pretty cool. And then the acoustics of the place.
Oh.
The acoustics of the place is insane when you get cheers and the galleries. I mean, unlike, you and I've both been to played in a lot of golf tournaments, been to a lot of golf tournaments. The ones we played in, there wasn't much galleries, but the ones that we've been to, there were, and there's nowhere sounds like Augusta is what I would say.
No, the cheers just roll across the place, right? Like you can hear the cheer growing, then paying off when the ball, you know, goes in or whatever happens, or the sigh that occurs, right? And then you fade off. You can be 7 holes away and still hear that building. I mean, it's just a beautiful design of the place. And, you know, who knows what they've done to make sure the sound carries through that place the way it does. But you know, obviously, I wouldn't be surprised if they've had sound researchers come in there and even look at the tree plan and everything and be like, okay, if we want these sounds to go through this place in these ways, we're going to keep these trees, leave these trees. I would expect them to actually be at that level of detail with that place because of what they're trying to accomplish and how well they do accomplish. Because we saw some huge tournaments at Firestone, right? Some of the best Tiger showdowns, the In the Dark showdown, the Jim Furyk showdown, right? Like all of those. And never are the cheers moving across the land in the same way as they do at Augusta.
Speaking of the trees, wasn't it a couple years ago they fell down due to those big windstorms?
Yeah.
Took a little of the magic away.
Last year, 2 years ago? Yeah. Luckily, nobody was hurt.
The wizard behind the pulling the string, something didn't line up. They didn't think about the root systems.
Those Georgia pines, as beautiful as they got shallow roots. And they, when you get a lot of rainfall, you know, there is a danger of that on every golf course. I mean, it's a conversation. Yeah. At the country club, we have to pay attention to them because of shallow roots. That's an issue. But
you mentioned putting your chair down.
Yeah.
Where are you putting it?
So my preference, I mean, I'm especially because you're typically going, I've always gone with a group. Typically, the one time I haven't, Nico and I got the pleasure to go to that, I think it was the April 2021 one with the limited audience. So we didn't set up anywhere there. We just kind of walked around, watched a lot of guys practice. But if you're going with people, it's cliche, but it's cliche for a reason. 16, the skipping, right? Like setting up on that bank, there's great bathrooms, there's great merch, there's great, the concessions are right there. You're on that. It's beautiful. You're watching 15 green, 16, watching the skipping. Because I've typically gone practice rounds and sitting there watching them do that. I mean, it's a blast. The crowd's into it. Everybody's cheering. You know, that's rule number one for me. After that, I love going to an interesting green and watching them practice. So 14 and 5 are stunning greens in person. Some of the best I've ever seen in my life. And watching them do their work on those greens is amazing. Then I know you and I did it the one time, the par 3 green, both 4 or 6. I think we sat up on 4 one time. Do you remember watching Podrick the one time?
Oh, yeah. That was awesome.
We're just watching him. He's like just dumping a ball in a bunker. He's in the bunker and he's just trying to hit a shot from him. And he's just dumping it and dumping it and dumping it. And I think we walked away like, oh, don't bet on Podrick this week. Yeah, I think he almost went and won.
He almost won it. Yeah. And we're like, oh God, that looked terrible.
And looking back, I think what he was doing was practicing just trying to dump a ball over the lip. Like, okay, how do I, because if I'm here, I have to barely get this ball over the lip. So he wasn't, you know, messing up necessarily. He was just really fine tuning how hard do I have to hit this to carry it over the lip. So you see him hitting shots like that and practicing shots during the practice round where you won't see that anywhere else the rest of the year outside of some of the Scottish Lynx courses, right? Where they do have to get crafty and creative. So Augusta, you sit there and watch them. They're figuring out a puzzle. Like walk with Ben, whoever's playing with Ben Crenshaw, walk with the people playing with him. Cause on the greens, you're going to hear them talking to Ben for 10 minutes per green. Like, what if I'm over here? How do I play this? What do I do here? And there's a reason this golf course shines and you can take advantage of it as a patron if you set up in the right spot.
Concessions. I'll give you a breakfast, lunch, and dinner order. What are you going with?
Let's start with you. You gave your breakfast first. No.
Their coffee's fantastic. I think it's one of those feelings. You're such in a good mood when you walk in there. Also, it needs to be mentioned, no cell phones has a factor to all these things.
Yeah.
I think from the gallery to your enjoyment of the day to like, where in the world are we all together without cell phones ever?
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of a place. I try to do it at our dinner table. We fail miserably, but like no cell phones. That is such a big aspect of this. But getting a coffee, the coffee's delicious. Mm-hmm. I think it's fantastic. I guess breakfast. Oh, don't they do a chicken biscuit? It's pretty
They do.
Good.
I think in the last, I don't know, however many years they've added some breakfast items. Yeah. Cause that's traditionally, if Richard Rockett's just listening to this, he knows where we go. We stop at Bojangles in Thompson, Georgia on the way over and get our Cajun biscuit there and some bow rounds because if you're near Bojangles and you want breakfast, you go to Bojangles.
Wow. God bless your gut afterwards. But yes, I've experienced that as well. And then lunch.
Are you pimento cheese guy?
Yeah, it's pimento cheese.
Tell me where you're at. Yeah.
A couple of those. Probably one egg salad, one pimento cheese. And then dinner, it's the barbecue, a little bit more substance. the barbecue, probably, you know, an import or whatever they call it. I love that the beers aren't branded. Where else can you go for that? That's pretty cool. A sports drink, for my lunch.
Yeah, you got to do a few of the sports drinks just because you need the hydration and the electrolytes.
Yeah, walking the place is definitely, you know, prepare yourself. It's a workout.
Yeah, I don't know where I stand on the pimento cheese. I mean, I get three or four probably if I'm there, but I don't love their pimento cheese. Like, I might never win the lottery after saying this if the wrong people are listening. I'm not an egg salad guy, so that I don't go for that. So I eat a few pimento cheese sandwiches. I don't love them. Not my favorite. The barbecue sandwich though hits. That thing
slaps.
That is good. We throw some pimento cheese on that. Now we can be in business.
Yeah. It's a classy move. Combine the two.
Go for a few peach ice cream sandwiches. I know a lot of people call them overrated. I could probably get behind that, but man, you're at Augusta. Peach ice cream sandwich. I'm going to go for at least one or two of those. So I have a sweet tooth too. They can be average and I'm still going to love sweets. So
I got my dad to go with me and my brother in, was that the 2017?
Mm-hmm.
Was that Adam Scott's year? No, that was... It was 2017.
I don't
remember. Danny Willett?
I know I'm getting older because I can't remember these things anymore. I think it's like, Danny Willett. Patrick Reed? Is that Spieth won in 16, right?
No, 2017. You know who it was? Sergio Garcia.
Yeah.
Yeah. My father probably had five or six peach ice cream sandwiches throughout the day. I'm like, Dad, we're going to be a diabetic when we leave here. We got to be careful. but he loved those bad boys. Yeah, concessions obviously a big part of it. And the price of it. It just adds to the spirit of people just being happy and looking out for each other. You know, seats. I always thought this was a cool cultural thing of the event is when you put down your seat, people can sit in it. And then when you come back, you just say, hey, it's my seat. And then they, oh, thanks. No problem. I'll get up. And I've just seen that play out in the course of it. There's not, you know, to contrast to other events, it's not like people, you know, me, let me look. It's all kind of like, it's a nice, orderly, but helping others type of scenario, it feels most of the time, which is also kind of unique for sporting events.
Oh yeah, it's the, there's a decorum and politeness to the whole grounds when you're there. And I always call it the opposite of Trader Joe's, right? If you have the Trader Joe's experience where everybody's like darting in front of each other and like, there's just no, oh no, you go ahead. It's just everybody, it's like chaos in there, right? People are just grabbing things and trying to, then the checkout's always full. Augusta's opposite, right? You're walking up to concessions. There's never a line, first of all. And even without a line, the person, if you're walking up with someone else, both of you are like, no, you go ahead, right? And like, you're going to be in and out quickly. Everything is down to science. No restroom lines, just everything is flowing. They're cleaning the toilets between every, you know, every use almost. Yeah. Like it is a different world.
Round. If you had your choice of a practice round or a real round or a competitive round, which one are you going to?
So here's the thing: I've never been to a competitive round ever. You know, I've never been to a competitive round. I've been to, I want to say, I don't know what it's 2024. I've probably been to 9-10 practice rounds at this point. Every day of the practice rounds, but I've never been to a competitive round. So you've been to both. What's your take on the difference between the two? I have an opinion of having never been there. So it means nothing, my opinion. But
yeah, I think if you want the honestly the best, well, it's just different, but that Disney World experience, I do feel practice round, it's almost best to start with practice round because it gives you more time, frankly, to enjoy it because I think the gates are open longer for practice rounds. If maybe I'm mistaken on that.
Yeah, I mean, sun up to sun down, basically, with the practice round. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Versus they kind of open gates more in line with tee times and close with tee times with the regular days. But the just seeing the players casually interacting, like you said, Ben Crenshaw and sitting down for lunches, and I almost feel more a part of it. At a practice round versus during a competitive round, I'm observing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because obviously those guys are in work mode at that point. And but there's more interaction. There's the skippers on 16. There's the kids. If you go on a Wednesday, which I've done before, you get the par 3 course. And I don't know. I think it's just maybe a happier, less serious, laid back type of feel. But then the competitive rounds as a competitor, it's my favorite competitive tournament I've ever been to as well, because the strategy and the actual golf shots and seeing guys rise to the moment. I'll say nothing beats a Sunday for, in my opinion, of being able to, I mean, think about winning the Masters and what everybody dreams about. And if you don't stick around for that crowning moment, like, it's emotional for everybody. I mean, it's emotional on TV, but everyone there is in it and they know what that means to win a freaking Masters. And so around 18 green is just, there's an energy there that's just, I've never really experienced. And that's probably, I was going to ask you, what's your favorite Masters memory from going to the Masters? And I can share mine.
Yeah. I mean, I think my, my favorite's definitely being there with Dad the first time. So it's my first Master, not Dad's first Masters, but that was that first one you're talking about, 2012. And I believe it was me, you, Ricky, and him, if I remember right. Because the next year we had a whole cohort of, 12 people or whatever. But yeah, just like being there, like you said, with the no cell phone thing and everything, like you connect with the people you're with more so than whatever. And I always remember Chucky, we were sitting on 16 Hill. I think he started taking a nap at one point.
Oh, yeah.
And what did he like, something happened, someone skipped, almost made it or something, and we're all cheering. And he just like popped up and just went, yeah, baby, like something like that. And then like literally passed right back out. Like he wasn't even awake when he did it. And we're just sitting there looking like, what? We're like, what was that he just did?
Oh, I forgot about yeah, baby. He goes, yeah, baby. And it goes right back to bed.
Right back to bed. But like I being think somebody, there with him and seeing, spending
in
that
his
time,
defense, we woke his ass up at 4 a.m. or whatever it was.
We did.
So he deserved a little nap by the end of the day. That is a great memory, personal memory. That same year, I'll go with the competitive. So that's a fun. That's an element of the practice round too. I think if you're going with family and you want to have that experience, that just being there is equally as special as during the competitive round. So I agree with you. If it's your first time, you're going with family or close friends, go to practice round. I actually
absolutely.
I think it is better.
Low stress, and then, closer to players, everything about it.
But my moment from the tournament was definitely 2012. That same year, Bubba. So. Gets in the playoff. He's a Georgia Bulldog. The place was, humming with Bubba chants all freaking day. And we're there on Sunday from sun up to sundown because of the playoff. And we kind of got out of position. I was like kind of kicking myself. I'm like, why are we not in this? Like, this is now going to be decided on number 10. And I kind of made a guess about, okay, it's going to be over at 10. We should have gone to 10 green and we're stuck in between the left side of 18 and 9.
Yeah.
And everybody's kind of, and my girlfriend at the time was getting a little, it's been a long day and maybe not the most sensible shoes we're on. And we're getting cranky towards the end of the day. And so we just stood there and let people go around. And I was like, all right, well, we'll catch the award ceremony. Maybe we'll stick around for that and just hang up here if it's decided on 10. Well, from the vantage point that we were at, we know Bubba hit it in the trees. And once they get in there, just the way that the crowd was kind of moved about, he just appears. And it's the tall, lanky guy in all white with his pink shat, or he was not hitting drive out of the trees, but his pink hat or whatever his frills were that week. And we got to see him hit that shot. Oh. And you didn't see the ball, but you saw it emerge from the trees and take that hard right turn. And I will never forget that vantage point. I will never forget being able to see that shot and how significantly it moved left to right and ended up with that 15 footer that sealed it for him. That's my favorite competitive memory from that event, being a part of history in that way. And also, I think it's a lesson in like, I was disappointed that I'm not like right next to the green, but it just so happened that I got to see one of the most remarkable shots in the game of golf and definitely Masters history.
Yeah. That's appropriately said too. That shot will go down forever, right? We will watch that shot for the rest of our lives. So out there, that Tiger chip on 16. Oh.
What about TV memory? So I'll ask you this way, because you're very particular about the Masters week from a television perspective. You kind of shut the calendar down sometimes, you'll make sure you treat it like a national holiday, don't you?
I mean, there's years I block off my calendar like months in advance and no meetings will get in there. Not every year, but a lot of years I do that. Yeah. TV memory, I mean, certainly like things that I remember vividly, Phil shot from the pine straw, right? And him making that putt to win his first major. Tiger's chip on 16, like watching that live and seeing that occur, like that's just, to me, stands out as a pinnacle. And then Tiger winning that most recent one too, you know, that's right there with Phil at Kiawah, a very similar thing in terms of just watching and realizing you're seeing history and doing that. And, you know, Claire and I, we always do a bet with the Masters every year. So we're always into that. So that was extra special that year, watching him come down the stretch and being like, oh my gosh, we're actually going to see this happen. And knowing like you get to witness that and carry that with you the rest of your life. Those are the ones that I think jump out to me immediately.
Yeah, Tiger, it needs to be like mentioned. I mean, all my TV moments that come to mind, at least, I could probably name a dozen or so that I enjoyed. But Tiger, just the backdrop of Tiger at Augusta is so freaking iconic. And that 2019, I thought was so cool about 2019 was the rain was coming, so they teed off so early. And I don't know what about that was. We knew it was coming. We knew when they were teeing off. And yeah, me and my wife made breakfast, had coffee, and watched the entire round of Tiger. And then for it to end so, wow, like we were both crying, you know? And I was like, we were laughing about the fact that we were crying, but just that the hero's journey, the hero's arc. When you think about, and I'll kind of take it back to what I said at the top of the show, when you think about Tiger, this young black man playing at an event called the Masters that was historically raced, a lot of racial issues at that club, as well as anywhere in the South, anywhere in golf for that matter. For him to, in 1997, storm the field and win by that ridiculous margin after shooting 42 on the front nine. And then all the other wins, all the other history becomes the poster boy for this same place, right? And did it quite well. And obviously fell out of grace. And there's the Hootie Johnson.
the famous lecture.
There, we're not perfect. The hero's not perfect. I guess for sure.
Yeah, the only player to be lectured by Augusta National when there's plenty of other things have occurred. There's an irony there.
There was an irony there, but that 2019, I think, was like, I don't know, a celebration of American golf in a way, you know, that Tiger was back, that he was able to win at Augusta again. And I just can't see that ever being beat. In golf, like that, the full journey. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
the whole circle.
It's our generation's Jack Nicklaus, right? Like, in terms of his 86 win, right? I think,
86, yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, I wish I would have been older with the Ben Crenshaw win after having lost Harvey Pinnock. I imagine, from a sentimental, emotional standpoint, that win, I think you could argue, is greater than the Jack or the Tiger win. In terms of flies to be the pallbearer, gets that little tip from Carl Johnson on the range that week and goes out there and wins and no business winning that tournament, goes out and wins and then breaks down crying. You know, it's the minute that ball is rolling over the lip on the 18th hole, like, yeah, just those sort of things. And the Masters brings that to the table, right? There's a reason. The reason the majors and the Masters specifically carry the torch in golf, and it's because moments like that happen and they mean something not only to the people participating, but also the people watching. You know, sticks with them and gives them inspiration. And yeah, we look forward to it every year.
Yeah. Well, I think we're up to time. It's a good place to end it. 2024, you want to make a wait? We're sitting here in March, so it would be an early prediction, but do you want to put a name out there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be completely... Okay, so by the book, Scottie Scheffler, how can you, I mean, what he can do creatively with the ball right now, granted putting, I do like putters at Augusta, but he's such a good ball striker and what he can do in positioning the ball that he just needs to putt average and he's going to be fine. So I'm going to go Scottie. I just think go with the chalk.
All right. I think it'll be a new green jacket winner this year. I'm going to go with Rory McIlroy.
Okay.
I'm going to do it. I'm ready to be hurt. Let's get hurt, Rory. Let's do it. But yeah, that's going to be my pick.
I know you and the family would be cheering that one pretty hard on Sunday if that comes to fruition.
Heck yeah. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Enjoy the Masters this week. It's always one of the best weeks of the year. And get your butt out there to play golf too. I think that's the other thing that the Masters does for so many of us. Mm-hmm. Remember, the course that you play doesn't have to look like Augusta. Your swing doesn't have to look like the guys that are playing Augusta. Hopefully it gives you the bug to get out there and just go hit it, go chase it. Tis the season, right, Professor?
That's right.
And thanks to our friends from Titleist for the support of this show, the Bag Drop, as well as New Club Golf Society. Thanks for everybody listening. I can't say that enough. If you do like the show and you're enjoying some of these episodes between the professor and I, some of our special guests, don't forget to follow us, subscribe, like us, rate us, review us wherever you listen to the pods, mostly Apple and Spotify, but it could be anywhere else. And we'll look forward to catching you on the next one.